It's beginning to look a lot like Tools Day. My podcast app says so. We'll analyze framework trends and learn about how to send animations without making browsers slow. It's beginning to look a lot like Tools Day. So many tools out there. But the prettiest sight to me are performance gains for free. Let us start the show. Welcome to holiday-themed Tools Day. Not really holiday-themed. Let's pretend. It's holiday-themed in a way because it is the holidays. Welcome to our podcast. It is about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about animation tools, web animation tools. And luckily, we have a guest who is so well-versed in this field. Like, I don't think you could find someone who has more experience with all the things, writing about all the things, practicing all the things. We have the incredible Sarah Drasner on the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm super, super, super excited to have you on the show because I have been following you, reading your things. We've like hung out. I'm so excited to like talk about animation with you. There's so many things out there now.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you've done a ton, and you've written a lot of articles for CSS Tricks. And I want to talk about some technologies that you brought up recently that I haven't even had a chance to experiment with yet. But also, you run a series of web animations workshops.
That's true. Yeah, with Valhead, who's also like animatrix on the web and does really, really awesome stuff. She speaks a lot at places like An Event Apart, which is really, really great. And she also has like a book out and stuff. She's very talented.
Yeah, honestly, I've learned most of my animation tips and tricks from your CSS Tricks articles. So this is great for me. I also met you recently at IBM when you did your workshop there. So I'm happy to have you.
Yeah,
on the
that
show.
Was our first web animations workshop. That was really exciting. We gave one. We're sponsored by IBM, so that was cool. So we did one in Austin, and then we had a sold out one in New York as well, just last week, where I got to see Yuna for a minute.
Yeah, so you're hopping basically IBM campus to IBM campus. What's your next animation workshop?
It's in San Francisco, which is really exciting. So that'll be in February. And then we're going to do another one in Paris, probably at the end of May. And we'll also, we're trying to see about something in between those two dates in Chicago. We're not sure about that one yet.
Nice. Yeah. So maybe that's a good way to kick off the show. What do you sort of teach and talk about at these workshops?
Yeah, we actually run the gamut. So we usually start off with a lot of theory because I think it's important that people know why they're animating things and not just animate tons of things all over the place, because animation is really powerful to convey meaning, and it's very, very strong. So when it's used improperly, it can be really annoying. And when it's done well, it can really guide your users. So we kind of go through best practices. We talk about integration into things like a design system to keep things nice and organized, animation audits, theories like using some old, you know, animation principles from, you know, days of yore, like Disney animation stuff. And then we move forward into tools. So we'll spend some time equally working with CSS and JavaScript, mainly GSAP, talking about the reasons why we think GSAP is pretty cool. We'll talk about D3. We talk about Mo.js. I talk about React and animating in React, because that's a whole different set of rules, even if you're using GSAP or CSS. I talk about React Motion a bit. So we try to kind of cover a lot of material in a couple of days. I think basically we try to give the attendees all of this information so that they can kind of like explore a bit on their own, but they're also making things actively during the workshop too.
That's a lot to cover.
Yes.
And an incredible amount of knowledge to share in a short period of time. So I want to sort of like rewind and go back to the beginning of that. You said that you started with sort of looking at animation principles, things like Pixar is using, and traditional animation. How does that translate to interface design and web animation?
Yeah, they're not all principles are really applicable. So Val does a really good job of teasing out some of the stuff that makes a lot more sense for us to kind of talk about. You know, things like anticipation make a lot of sense when you're talking about things like perceived motion, you know, perceived wait times and things like that. There's, you know, a few things about timing and spacing that are applicable to Disney films and also to interfaces. And there are some things about designing with emotion that attach to your limbic system and are also important for like engaging the users. Like probably the first time that you ever cried during a movie was an animated film. Animation does have the, you know, chance and opportunity to really engage you in that way. So we kind of go over some of the principles of like how to do that in a way that reflects your branding and doesn't like, you know, kind of overdo it. Like if you're a bank, you probably don't want to do the same kind of thing as like MailChimp, because they have different kind of branding right. schema. So we break down some of that stuff and how to incorporate it in your system. We also talk about buy-in a bit, because that tends to be a thing that people need to have covered, because not everyone is always going to be down with animation. A lot of times people have seen bad animation on the web and then forever have held it in their brains that animation is not a good thing. So we kind of talk about like breaking that idea apart and how you can collaborate on smaller projects and really get things that will probably increase your lead gen and stuff and make your website more performant. And then we also talk about animation performance itself. So yeah, we cover a bunch of things.
Wow, yeah.
I'm so curious about the buy-in topic. So I'm actually right now, this is kind of off topic a little bit, but I'm the lead of a design system at Bluemix, and motion is one of the things that we've been talking about for a while. But it's one of those things that always gets shoved to the side. It's like, oh, we could work on motion now, or we could work on these other things that maybe seem more critical. So how do you kind of work?
Sure. Yeah. A couple of things is that there's like real data behind perceived wait time and performance, and that animation can help with that. So showing people studies that have already been conducted where you can actually see the difference, like, wow, people were willing to wait twice as long because you spent a little bit of time on this animation. That's important for someone like a PM. They don't want to feel like you are spending time or wasting time because it's a hobby. Animation always kind of sounds fun, which is good and bad. It's bad because it actually has a purpose. And so people will kind of make it sound like fluffiness when actually it can be really, really valuable. We also show animations that are baked into the system and really, really help with kind of user flows versus animations that are kind of shoved on top of something. And you can actually tell the difference. You can tell the difference between an animation that's meant with to like work along with the system. You might, one like pretty obvious big one is like Stripe's checkout has a really, really nice user flow, and it doesn't feel like animation. It just feels a little bit better. I have some demos where I try to show this,
right.
And none of those demos could be made with the animation slapped on top. And I think a lot of the time when animation is slapped on top, the user can feel it. Like when people add it later and it's just an additive thing, people are sitting around waiting for this extra bit of nonsense. And so that's not really respectful of your users. It's not super respectful of your company or the, you know, their resources. So kind of like, teasing those things apart and talking about like what is, you know, respectful of your company and, you know, how you can make compromises too by like plotting out what are the things that you can use all over your system that have a lot of payoff with not a lot of effort versus like pet projects. Like, I'd love to make a crazy animated about page. Like, maybe you won't get to do that yet. Maybe you need to do some of the smaller, like custom loader to show your users you care kind of thing, or like a submit button that lets you know that something happened instead of just like leaving the user hanging, that might increase conversion. If you can do some of those smaller projects that's just like, you know, a little animated button that actually increases conversion, you're gonna start to see that people trust you a little bit more to not just like slap a bunch of weird stuff all over. I also tend to talk a little bit about existing systems and how every beautiful animation, like not many companies have beautiful animation pieces of their design systems, but almost every single one that I've ever seen or worked on has animations that don't make sense. Like, there's, like, one inevitably that flips something upside down. I'm like, why do you have this? Like, nobody in the history of anything has ever made an animation that, like, you don't need a button to flip upside down. That's never going to happen. Like, why are you writing that? Like, you wouldn't. So, like, trying to get people to think about it in the same way that they would think about a font or something. Like, you wouldn't load 20 fonts into a system if you're not going to use them. But like, you wouldn't make. Yeah, that's true. But, like, you know, a responsible web dev will make one decision for performance and stability and cohesive design and performance for fonts, and they won't think about the same thing for animation. So trying to, like, get people to say, like, just like you wouldn't make your site look like a ransom note with tons of fonts everywhere, you probably should not do the same thing with animation. You should keep them cohesive.
Yeah, that's a great metaphor. I'm gonna steal that.
I also like that you mentioned animation in terms of improving performance, because I feel like a lot of the pushback for using animation on the web is performance, and it's a performance slowdown since you have to repaint your page or somehow alter the layout. But there are a lot of tools that help with that. Also, like you said, it might be a small performance hit in terms of technical web, like, reload performance, but you get a much greater impact in perceived performance and user flow, which is really, really important.
Yeah, and I think actually people are wrong about the performance hit of animations. I think if you do them poorly, like, most of the time that people come to me on Twitter and they say, like, oh, well, we just, like, the performance hit was so bad, and then I ask to see the animation, it's because they're doing it completely wrong, they're not hardware accelerating things, and they're, like, moving things with margins and things like that. You know, people will say stuff like, oh, it's not good for mobile. I'm like, what do you mean by that? Because there's a lot of different ways of integrating an animation. Like, the other day I was talking to someone who was saying, like, oh, well, you know, it, like, what's really bad is when you use things that rely on request animation frame instead of CSS. I'm like, depends, because if you're talking about SVG, which can't be hardware accelerated, then actually if you run tests, there's fewer paints in a request animation frame than there is in CSS. Those are from the tests that I've run. I'm happy to, like, have someone prove me wrong, but, like, I think people just run on assumptions without actually testing this stuff, and that's why I do run tons of benchmarks, just to, like, fully see if that's true. So I think sometimes things, any tool can be used improperly and any tool can be used well. So I try to advocate that people, like, learn how to use the tools properly before making those assumptions.
So it just gets a bad rep. Mm-hmm. From people using it poorly. I'm curious, what do you use for benchmarking? What tools do you use there?
Sometimes I'll use the Chrome timeline. I've also used a tool called Fizma, which helps me gauge visual performance. It's hard to tell. Like, a lot of times we have, you know, the performance that the, you know, JavaScript heap and things like that, and, like, the timeline reports, but that's not exactly the same performance as what the user sees. So what I'll do is I'll plot things along a path with this tool called Fizma. And if it stays in the same place for more than two frame counts, I know that there's jank. This is, like, a slightly imperfect way of doing these reportings, but same it with Chrome DevTools timeline. Chrome DevTools timeline actually does change depending on updates. So I'll like, run tests in one version of Chrome and then, like, wait and then use another version of Chrome, and they're different. So I would say that, like, all benchmarks are probably a little bit flawed. Those two tend to be pretty good. Also, you know, use other kinds of tools for mobile, but mostly the Chrome DevTools and timeline does a pretty good job of, you know, showing all of those things. Firefox also has some really great animation tools now, so I kind of compare across different browsers as much as I can. I have a little bit of a hard time testing them on, like, Microsoft browsers with their DevTools, but I'd be happy to be shown how to do it better by anybody who knows them better.
I really want to like Edge. Every time I see an Edge report, I'm like, wow, it's so good. Now it's great. And I never
kind of
use it.
I like the sentiment behind it. So if any Edge devs are listening, please inform us about how to best use your dev tool. Maybe we'll have someone on the show. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, you could bring, like, Aaron Gustafson or Rachel Neighbors works for them now. So.
Yeah.
All right. Circling back to tools, so, you know, when people get started with animation, oftentimes like, oh, how do I even begin? So before we jump into libraries, are there any native techniques that you would kind of recommend that people start out with? And when do you start, you know, move from native to like a React Motion or G3 or
GSAP or Mo, all these cool new tools?
Yeah, GSAP, I think actually CSS is nice. There's a lot of stuff that CSS does. It does hardware accelerate really well if you're working with DOM elements that aren't SVG. So that's really lovely. Canvas is also beautiful and wonderful and very performant. So they're used for different things, right? CSS animations are better for small UI UX interactions, where Canvas, where you're attaching a single DOM node and then animating a lot of pixels inside that space, you're like essentially leaving the DOM to go animate somewhere else. So Canvas is not good for things like accessible stuff. It's not good for like an existing interface. It is good for beautiful, immersive, three-dimensional experiences and things like that. So Canvas is highly performant for tons of DOM nodes. CSS is really, really performant for like small interactions. CSS starts to break down when you start to chain multiple interactions. It also fails because of penner easing. It uses cubic Bezier, which is not that advanced of an easing structure. You basically only have a couple of control points, so you can't make really realistic physics-like animations. So, I mean, you can, just takes a lot more work. So, you know, if you're interested in making like realistic lifelike motion, even for things like an opening and closing drawer, you can't have interruptible animations, for instance. Like if you'd like a chat head that goes across the screen when you move your mouse around, you can start to do stuff like that with like hooking CSS, new CSS variables, which are alive in the browser with something like JS. So there are opportunities emerging for things like that. You can pair it with things like Zing Touch, which is a nice library for, you know, swipe gestures and things like that. But React Motion, but you know, like once things get kind of complex, you basically have to switch, especially in the DOM, you have to kind of switch out and go to things like React Motion and GSAP and stuff. And I would say that like sometimes just the workflow in itself is a huge reason why I do that. Another reason is if you are animating SVG, it stabilizes things across browsers, which for me as like somebody who's pushing things to production at large companies is invaluable. There's a million CSS hacks I have to do with SVG animations that I don't have to do at all in GSAP, and I know that it's going to be stable across like all a ton of mobile browsers. That's really great. Right.
Yeah. No, yeah. So speaking of GSAP, so there are a couple different like major JavaScript libraries. Like this Velocity.js, GSAP. Is GSAP basically?
Yeah, I used to use Velocity, and then I ran tests, CSS versus Velocity versus Smile. Smile is now deprecated.
Wait. Okay, I heard that Smile was getting deprecated, et cetera, et cetera. But recently, I think like in the last few months, somebody told me that it wasn't actually getting deprecated.
Okay, so what really happened is Microsoft said that they'll never support it. So Chrome started deprecating it. Then enough people complained that Chrome's like, okay, we're undeprecating it. So undeprecating does not mean supporting. So okay. It doesn't mean that it's going into the future. Okay. They're not working on it actively. It's not a technology that they're focusing on. They're just not actively going to deprecate it. So I think a lot of confusion has gone around that. And most of the reasons that they cite for that is because Microsoft won't support it. So like for them, it's like, why are we going to go forward with a technology that people devs need support on another browser for? They'd rather put their, you know, their efforts into something like the Web Animations API, where they know that Microsoft is moving forward. They know that everybody's got buy-in, and they know it's for more than just SVG. I think everybody's kind of aligned. All the browsers are kind of aligned that they all really like Web Animations API and they'd like to focus their efforts instead on that.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Speaking of Web Animations API, I actually don't know anything about Web Animations API beyond that it's a new spec. So Is that going to be a replacement for?
Yeah, I mean, I think what, really? It has a lot of potential. It's got all of the kind of like chaining and tooling stuff that you're really excited about. I mean, GSAP. Okay, so for just a little bit of history, GreenSock GSAP is the same thing. They've been working on this stuff for 10 years because they used to be a Flash lib and then switched to JavaScript. So they're kind of like way far advanced beyond anybody else. And most other libraries are like, oh yeah, well, if you want to do this complicated thing, just use GreenSock. So like SnapSVG is like, we're not really an animation library, just goes use GreenSock. So so they have a leg up. Web Animations API kind of promises a lot of the things that GSAP is already good at. So that's really exciting for animators because you're talking about, you know, a native technology that does that. The only issue that I see is that it's a little bit far out because I've used it before, and even using a polyfill, things break because the spec's moving and they're improving on it. It's
and
like
all the different browsers need to implement it, and that takes time, and it's maybe a little different.
Yeah, and it, don't get me wrong, it breaking is a good thing. That means that they're actively working on it.
Yeah,
it also means it's not ready at all yet. And I'm not sure when it will be ready. I suspect that since GSAP is still also actively working, it's going to be hard for Web Animations API to ever be at the same stage as GreenSock, like in the next few years, because of the cross-browser stability thing. That's a big thing for me. But I do think that not having to load an external resource is like super awesome.
And this is the Jobs with Web platform. Like, they're there to make developers' lives easier, and they're seeing that there's a big need for an animation library. People were hacking together CSS and Smile, like with SVG, and trying to make it work. There's Canvas, there's a lot of different solutions, but the Web Animations API allows you to have those native element-based solutions just through JavaScript and integrate that into your browser without having those additional dependencies, making those choices too. If it's native, everyone's using the browser option, then that also reduces cruft of all these different libraries and tooling frameworks out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah. Plus, for us, we had a couple of issues with GreenSock. One was that there's a license issue with GreenSock. If you're in an enterprise firm, right, it costs some money.
Yeah, I think for TweenMax, isn't it like a little bit different? Like, it's the plugins that end up costing the money? Yeah, so I think the base thing, if you want to animate with GreenSock, is not costly and doesn't have license. That's, I'm just clarifying that because I get that question almost constantly. That the base kind of library, which has a lot in it and has timeline and stuff, you don't have to pay for. But once you move into using any one of their plugins, and their plugins are pretty freaking sweet. There's like Morph SVG.
Path is so nice.
So I would say like the chances that you're gonna use GreenSock and then you're not gonna want to use the plugins is probably small, but that's on you.
And another thing, TweenMax is pretty heavy, right? Even TweenLite is.
I don't think so. I think TweenLite is something like 7 kilobytes gzipped.
TweenMax
last time I looked was around 20 kilobytes gzipped, but I haven't looked in a little while, so it might have gotten bigger since I looked.
Yeah.
20 kilobytes is more substantial for sure. 7, not too bad. And the thing that TweenMax, like one of the big things that TweenMax gives you is the ability to create loops, and you can actually write loops yourself without that, so you can get around that. There are some CSS properties that it support that TweenMax supports that you can't get in TweenLite, so that's a reason to load the extra resource. But you can definitely try to do stuff with TweenLite until it becomes a problem, and then.
And TweenLite gives you a timeline, right?
I'm not sure if it does. I don't think so.
Okay.
I'd have to look. I'd have to look.
To me, timeline is the biggest advantage to using one of these external libraries. But I'm sure there's lots of other options and reasons to use them. What are your top reasons for using something like GSAP as opposed to trying to make it work with JavaScript and just your native availabilities?
Yeah, I mean, you could run request animation frame and stuff, and like, you know, you could probably see like a performance hit of like, you know, a couple kilobytes or something like that. But I think that the workflow is huge for one thing. You can easily adjust timing. You can animate your animations. You can wrap them into functions and put them on a master timeline, which keeps them very organized. So if you're a pro developer, like, your code will be easy to read, easy to manipulate, easy to adjust over time, easy to make the speed the whole thing up. You can reverse it, you can pause it, you can resume it. It's got like all of these kind of like more advanced features that, like, if you're gonna be doing anything, I mean, I think like people hear me say like adjust the timing and they think that I'm being picky. I've never ever ever made an animation where I didn't adjust the timing like a million times. I think that people can kind of shrug that stuff off, it but the CSS really becomes a bummer in that way. CSS also kind of sucks because you're updating things in two places. You have the keyframe values and also the animation. Right. So you're kind of looking in these two different spots for your animation. So if you've got a lot of longer, complex chained animations, or you need things to fire at the same time, you're having to look at a lot of different places to keep that stuff consistent and that your code easy to maintain and legible. Whereas GreenSock, you can add two things on a timeline with a relative label and have them fire exactly at the same time, no matter what comes before them. So you can iterate timing of the animations before it and not have to worry about adjustments down the line or changing the delays or any kind of weird things that are kind of hacks in CSS that we've gotten kind of used to. For those reasons, I really enjoy working with GSAP. Mo.js offers a lot of these things too. Mo.js has a beautiful timeline. They also have these like GUI tools that are kind of crazy and awesome. Like, I should link up this like Vimeo into the show notes because I think it's amazing. There's like, you know, it comes, you can have like a tool that's a player. So you can just like load this player tool and it will like allow you to start and stop and replay your animations and pick the speed like a YouTube video or something. Then you can also load this other thing that allows you to adjust the ease in an SVG path. So you can change the easing to like whatever your imagination allows. And easing is a really important part of animation's character. One animation will look totally different than the other one with the same kind of characteristics because of easing.
It sounds to me like we got away from using Flash and now we're using Flash but with JavaScript again. Like, here's a GUI recreating your animations.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why that happened is because a lot of people came from Flash. You know, a lot of people who are older developers, like the people who I know who animate, who have been doing it for a while, definitely have a Flash background and are like, we're missing all those tools. And I think that animation authors, animation library authors recognize that. And certainly Lego Mushroom, the guy who made Mo.js, does. I know.
What a great name.
He also has like, it's a little oopy, Mo.js. It has a lot of like things that come out of the box. Like, you can do these bursts that are just like a burst right out of the box. I was just on Coding Rainbow with Daniel Schiffman, that where I like live coded a few bursts and stuff, and they're really That's fun awesome. To play with.
Yeah.
I think they have like swirls and like crazy things where you can like update these like swirl frequencies and sizes. Oh my gosh,
all the important things.
Also, if you're coming from the GreenSock world, that was previously a Flash animation library, right? So a lot of the tooling and techniques and verbiage is from that world.
Yeah, so tween is like a Flash, like that has its basis in Flash things. Like, when somebody asked me like why does everybody use the word tween, I'm like, because they're all stealing from Flash.
You're just tweening between frames, obviously. Like, come on.
Even though I'm not of this generation that you're talking about, I still learned Flash first. Like, that was my first programming language, ActionScript. And I would make like these little video game animations and websites in Flash. I've made 4 Flash websites in my life.
That's awesome.
So there were a lot of nice things there. So I was just very like curious that you said there was this GUI for Mo.js, because that to me is just kind of bringing all this back.
Oh yeah, now. He's even going to build out a timeline. He's got people working on it for like in kind of like an open source help kind of way. There's like a Slack channel that I'm on and just like, hey, can we have this?
Like, that's so cool. So that's like kind of the newest thing that's going on right now in terms of animation libraries.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if other things, you know, took off of that too. Personally, I don't like use GUIs too much, but that path easing one is really invaluable to me because you can see it.
I use them in coding, but I feel like with animation that could be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm just really curious now. I want to watch that video. We'll definitely link all of this in the show notes so people can explore.
Yeah, like if you type V in my browser, like Chrome is like, yeah, you want to go watch that video again, don't you? It's like a Vimeo video. Such a nerd.
We're all nerds here.
Oh, yeah, so and I guess I should also, thing I should mention too is React Motion is really beautiful and really awesome. It is similar to game-based animation where you give something mass and physics and send it on its way. So very counter to like GreenSock and Mo.js and CSS where you're dealing with time. Mo.js doesn't have a concept of time. It's basically like however long this thing takes to get there is how long it takes to get there. Because of this, it's really, really...
So I'm actually, I do a ton of React. So, you know, my React experience with Motion has always been with the React CSS transition group. So has this, in your mind, is replaced
they're,
completely?
They're two different ways of working with something. React CSS transition group you can use with CSS. You can actually even hook GSAP into something like that because then you can like check if something is entering and leaving and, you know, not dirty up the kind of functions that you're using. GSAP, you can also just create a GSAP function and tie it into something like should compute, will component update and things like that. Or component will update. React Motion, you're definitely working with it in a React-y kind of way, which is really nice. You're passing in the like interpreted, you know, the styles that are going to be interpolated, and then it will, you know, figure out that using Spring Physics. So it's like in synthetic physics, and you can, there are like parameters you can adjust. I'll give you a link to some of the ones you can play with in the show notes too. So what's really nice about it is it's interruptible. So you can like, you know, move your mouse and do something and then you can change your mind and it can like kind of follow you. You can also do staggering motion that way too. Like most of the time when you're using staggering motion in SAS or something or GSAP, you're basically saying like, I want all of these animations and I want them to follow each other, you know, based off of this one, you know, small piece of second.
That's why I like Smile. That's like the only reason why I'm holding on to Smile is because you can do that inside of an SVG itself. It's really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to do all that stuff in GSAP and CSS. GSAP has really, really easy staggers. That's probably the easiest stagger you're going to find. Plus, they have things like cycle stagger, which I'll get to in a second.
I'm getting too excited. I'm just so like mind blown by all these options.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff to work with. So in React Motion, basically the thing is updating from the other thing. So in essence, it's getting the animation is it's getting it for free, which means that when you send something on its way, it is updating one after another, and because of that, has beautiful like really really complex and fluid motion that you can't get in any other way. I have a demo that shows this that I'll give you because it's hard to explain just saying it. But because that's the idea is that it's like interruptible and it's like physics-based motion. You can't do things like have two things get there at the same time necessarily. You can try, but it's hard. You can't do things like you can't do things like a loop. You'd have to create an infinite loop and crash your browser. And there is like an on-end hook that you can hook into, but chained animations are really hard and way too verbose in React Motion and can fail in a lot of circumstances. Cheng Liu has talked about this with a lot of people who, you know, are, you know, asking about the library and will basically say, like, this is not really what this library is intended for. There is a fork of React Motion that makes chaining a little bit easier, but it's not kept up the same way. So you can look into that. I'll give you that repo. Am I giving too many things?
No,
like...
yeah.
No, this is
what the show is about. It's about giving like a little brief glimpse into all the different tool options that you have to use. And yeah, I'm learning so much. I work with CSS animation pretty regularly, but I haven't really dug into Mo or GSAP really much more than just basics. So I'm just like, yes, tell me more. Tell me about React animation. Tell me about all the things. I wish the show could go on forever. It's just like a ton of knowledge dumping.
I do think we are pretty close though. So any totally over, way over.
Sorry, I rambled.
So any last comments from you?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it and letting me ramble about animation tooling, which I'm like obviously very excited about.
Not just that, but it's very obvious that you have all of the knowledge and you have put all of that knowledge into a book coming out.
Oh yeah, I have a book called SVG Animations with O'Reilly. So it's like one of those animal books. The early release came out this week, so chapters 1 through 6. And that's probably like a third of the book. And then the rest comes out in March, and probably early release will keep releasing chapters as they're available. I'm really excited for that.
So if you want to dig into any of those things that were mentioned on the show, get a little more information about how to work with animations in specific detail in a book, this is definitely the one to grab. So what is your book called again?
SVG Animations.
SVG Animations. Awesome.
Very straightforward.
It's one of those animal books. We'll link to it in the show notes. Thank you again for joining us. This has been so informative.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, we'll see you guys later. Bye.